Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Maybe Next Year, the podcast that proves just because your position group did well doesn't mean you have job security. I'm Frank.
I'm Scott.
And I'm former inside linebackers coach Paul.
Paul, so sorry to hear you just got let go from the Buffalo Bills after what was seemed like a pretty good year for the inside linebackers.
Yeah, it happened. You know, 100% of my position players did great. I don't understand what happened.
I'm also a little to be fair though, given his ability to contribute to the podcast and his general lack of football knowledge, I'm not surprised that you got let go.
Oh, right.
I know. I think they probably listened to the podcast and they're like, oh my God, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Right.
How That's the hell a better did Kiko joke. Do anything this year?
Well, we do have some Bills news. Despite the fact that the Bills are not doing anything right this moment on the field, they did make a few headlines this week, some good, some bad, and one very new story, which we'll save for a second. Let's talk about the stories that we sort of have a handle on, and then we'll speculate wildly about the Pettine possible fiasco. But Dreisbach, what's his first name? I don't even care anymore. Is it Dave? Mike?
Grad?
Jim?
Ed?
Chuck?
Ed.
Chuck. This article that did not have his name. When I was looking at it, I went to look at his name, and wasn't there, and it blinked. And that's how podcasts are made.
Chuck. It was Chuck.
Yes.
Got it.
It was Chuck.
Chuck Dreisbach did not make an impression on Doug Marone either, even though they went to the same high school. He was let go this week. Also, despite, as we mentioned, a very good performance by the inside linebacker group. If you were gonna pick linebackers you wanted to replace, you probably wouldn't have picked the inside linebackers. And yet, the Bills wanted to change direction, change the dynamic on the staff. They said he hadn't done anything wrong, and that was it. He was just sort of bring your playbook coach, and that was it, which is really sort of uncommon. I don't want to say strange, but it's certainly uncommon.
It's definitely I don't know exactly how it works, because when they let go of, as we were talking about last week, Ike Howard, Hilliard Cross, that happened right after the season was over.
Right.
And this seemed to just wait for like 10 days randomly. So why clearly there was some evaluating that was going on in the offseason that they needed more time to do, or do they want to talk to Kiko about it, or what? Because
I hope they didn't talk to Kiko about it, because as great as he was this year,
there's a lot of that shit going on.
Okay.
I mean, with you talk about the unnamed Washington football team, then, you know.
Right. Who, which coach will be. Right. But Kiko Alonso is, first of all, not the quarterback of the football team.
That's true. No,
even if he's possibly set up to be the quarterback of the defense. And second of all, I mean, I guess maybe he has the position to sort of have sway over a positions coach.
That's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, clearly Kiko is basically, I don't want to say he's untouchable at this point, but if you're going to ask 99% of Bills fans, do you want to keep Chuck Dreisbach or Kiko Alonso? I think I know the answer.
How many people were, well, I'll let Paul give some insight, and then I'll make a joke.
Sure, and I hope I don't ruin your joke. I promise not to make any jokes.
You should make a joke, because if you make the joke I'm going to make, then that's you deserve it.
All right, I have none in mind, but if something I'm inspired by while I'm talking comes up, I will certainly say it. So I think the tough thing is we never really know the inner machinations of these things and how it necessarily comes about. I would bounce off one theory maybe, which is that as talented as Alonso was, and especially as great as he was early in the year with four interceptions in the first five or six games, whatever that was, he did kind of level off. And let's remember, he was responsible for a lot of those long runs that went against the Bills. And I'm thinking they're not going to replace Kiko for that, obviously, because that's something he can learn.
Right.
But they could have said to Chuck, like, listen, you had all year to, and they didn't say this to him, they just let him go. But their thinking could have been, you had all year to get him to figure out how to stay in that lane, how to, you know, stay at the part of the field where he should be on the part of the field. He has the talent. He's a good listener. Why couldn't you get him to do these things? And maybe felt that he was somewhat at fault for some of the long runs that were going on. And maybe Scott used the term evaluating. Maybe their evaluation was watching film and saying, wow, why wasn't Coach Dreisbach catching this, you know, every time? Why wasn't he communicating this to Kiko? And then maybe they ask Kiko, and he's like, well, Coach Dreisbach never told me any of this.
So, right.
Again, this is all pure speculation. But I just go to bring out the point that, you know, we don't really know what's going on. in the evaluation room and behind closed doors. They obviously saw something in either Kiko's game or some of his backups' games, because their backups hit the field so much with him playing 100% of the defensive snaps this year. They might have found something in this game that they felt didn't develop like it should have under proper coaching. So that's the bottom line, whatever that was. And so as a result, you know, I wish him the best of luck, and hopefully he lands on his feet somewhere, just not here.
I sort of want to speak to Scott's other point, though, that, you know, the receivers coach, Ike Hilliard, was let go the day after the season because the receivers were a terrible unit. So you're right, Paul. It might be because they didn't have enough time to – they hadn't gone over all the – done all of their breaking down a film and looking at things. But at the same token, they must have had some sort of idea that he was performing – if they thought he was performing poorly, you would think that that would have shown itself a little bit quicker than this. When they talked about the dynamic on the team, maybe there was something. I mean, I guess he's worked with Pettine before, and he knows Coach Marone. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me a bit more of like a personal.
It might be something issue. Like that. He doesn't mesh well with the outside linebackers coach. Like, they have to be on the same page in terms of how they're teaching the gaps and the fits and stuff. And
which does go to Paul's point that he's not teaching something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But it seems a little strange. And it just might be exactly what Doug Marone said it was, that there's some sort of issue and dynamic with the defensive coaching, and they want to straighten that out, and they think the best way is to move him. Because as Scott also pointed out, Kiko Alonso is a lot more popular. Nobody is giving BJs in the back of cars in the parking lot for Dreisbach jerseys, and nobody is writing Chuck Dreisbach in for a dog catcher in Buffalo. So,
right, and there is no hashtag the legend of Chuck Dreisbach.
No, but there should be. As a matter of fact, I encourage you, Twitter man, to do that. The legend of Chuck Dreisbach.
I'm typing this down. I'm going to type this down right now, so yeah, to make sure I don't forget this all-important duty of starting the legend of Chuck Dreisbach.
You have an assignment. Sticking in the line, so we're going to progressively work our way out from the coach now to the actual inside linebacker. The legend of Kiko Alonso did in fact grow a bit. I think this happened today, but I apologize. Time has gone all woozy with me with work this week, but Kiko Alonso was named the Pro Football Writers Association's Defensive Rookie of the Year. That's different than the actual Defensive Rookie of the Year, but the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year, the one announced by the league. But that's still a really impressive feat. And
I would say arguably more impressive, because I don't know how the NFL comes with the Defensive Rookie of the Year,
right?
In terms of coaches or players or, you know, other media or whatever. But honestly, the writers are the ones who end up watching most of the football in the, you know, in terms of other teams and seeing other players and stuff. You know, the coaches, obviously, as opposed to like, you know, in college where coaches spend a lot of time having to do media events and do recruiting and do all that kind of stuff in the Wheeler League. They're not watching out of conference games. They're not watching all 120 college teams. The coaches in the NFL are a little better than that, but really it's the writers and the media that end up having the best kind of general knowledge of who's good and who's bad in the league. So I think this is a great honor, obviously.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you can pick a guy in almost the middle of the second round, you're thinking, wow, this guy could be a contributor his rookie year. I guarantee you, I don't have the number, but you're probably looking at somewhere between 15 and 25 defensive players drafted before him this year. And he finishes third in the NFL in total tackles and plays a difference maker in a lot of games. Obviously, the Ravens game is the one that stands out the most.
Sure.
It's an incredible honor for him, and let's hope that it's the beginning of something great for him, and that he ends up being, again, like I said last week, the Ray Lewis without the murders of this Bills defense, where he's on this team for 10, 15 years and
alleged
championship after championship.
He didn't actually murder the guy. He was just an accomplice.
Alleged.
Right. Alleged. We don't know he didn't murder the guy. I mean, he could have.
Sure. We don't know a lot of things. It doesn't mean we're going to say that he did it. Okay. alleged.
But wait, I'm confused by this article now, because it's saying that the Eddie Lacy was the 2013 Rookie of the Year,
which I think was the Pro Football Writer Association's Rookie of the Year, overall Rookie of the Year.
Overall Rookie of the Year, which is different than the Offensive Rookie. This is like the MVP and Offensive Player of the Year. Like,
yeah, it might be,
because Keenan Allen got Offensive Rookie of the Year. So
right,
Yeah, so clearly that is the MVP offensive player of the year kind of.
I think it's just they need to name three people, and at some point they probably said, you know, you're not naming enough defensive people as, you know, maybe. Rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Right. I think they honestly, if you wanted to really make it fair, have like an offensive lineman rookie of the year, because who the heck would pay attention? I'm sure an offensive, without looking this up, I guarantee you an offensive lineman has never won rookie of the year. They just don't get that kind of credit.
Yeah, they just, you're right. And the thing is, like, those players, you know, coaches know who those players are and players know who those players are, which is probably a bit more. And there are probably smaller awards that are granted for those players, but you're right. They've limited themselves to sort of impact players that ought to become media savvy household names. And so, you know, Eddie Lacy and Keenan Allen, who played really well in that playoff game this week.
Yeah, he was nuts. It was funny when I had seen his name among the nominees for the award. I was thinking, all right, well, I kind of know this guy's game. And then watching him play on a Sunday, I was thinking, wow, this guy's really got together. And one of those guys, I'm glad the Bills drafted Kiko Alonso, obviously. And of course, it's too much for ask them to hit on two picks. But man, if they could have drafted Keenan Allen as well, that would have.
Yeah.
Imagine how different this year could have been.
We'll talk about it more, but I was really happy for the Chargers this year and how they played. If they weren't playing Denver, who has Peyton Manning, who happens to be my favorite player who's not a Bill, I would have easily rooted for the Chargers. And I would have definitely been rooting for them against New England. But let's talk about the Chargers more later. But let's talk also about what an incredible pick this was. How many times have we sat here, both on air and well before we ever started doing this, and lamented the terribleness of the Bills draft machine? It's not just the Mike Williams and the Aaron Mabins of the world, which are bad enough. It's also the questions of, you know, drafting Willis McGahee and Marshawn Lynch and CJ Spiller when maybe you didn't need them, who were all excellent running backs. I mean, they're all going to be really good, remembered as good running backs, all three of them. But did you need them at those times? So there was that type of wasted pick. When's the last time the Bills had a guy like this who really, you know, second round, you can't say he's unknown, but he was not considered a first tier player. And they really hit on him in a way that is sort of like you know, knock on wood, if he becomes the defensive equivalent of, say, a Rob Gronkowski, you know, without the injuries, that's a massive find for the Bills. And when's the last time you could say they had a massive find?
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, we've had some years where we swung and mixed. I mean, I'm looking at 2008, you know, Liotis, who's still on the team, but not anywhere near to a first round 11 overall pick.
Right.
Then you go after that, James Hardy, Chris Ellis, Reggie Corner, Derek Fine, Alvin Bowen, Xavier Oman, Demetrius Bell, Stevie Johnson.
Right. Demetrius Bell and Stevie Johnson both played.
Both played as much as you would expect for a seventh rounder, which
right,
is
sure.
where you're at there. But that's the thing. Missing on 2 through 6 there, that's how you end up with a team that isn't as talented, because you don't have quality depth behind your starter. So when guys get injured, suddenly you're playing a bad fifth rounder.
Right.
Or a guy who's going to get cut in training camp, as I think, I mean, Ed Wang didn't last longer than a year.
A year and a half,
other guys, you know, Derek Fine, Reggie Corner, they were depth guys for a little while, but they were not starting they were not even capable replacements. So yeah, I mean, it's great that we've got some talent that we've been able to put together in the last two drafts. Now we need to do basically two more drafts, I think, and we'll be in really good shape.
Yeah,
the Bills haven't done a good job, as Frank mentioned, with the steals. The last one I can really recall would have been, was it 06? I think they drafted Kyle, and that was really the last time I remember thinking, wow, they really found a steal here, and he was in the fifth round.
Right. Yeah.
So you look in that second through fifth round, let's say, those are players who, let's face it, a lot of them are just going to be contributors. Some are going to flame out, and that's expected. But you think the Bills would hit on that more often than not. But in recent history, they just haven't. You look at those second through fifth round picks, and maybe you'll find a contributor here and there. But more often than not, you find some throwaway depth NFL players. That's why I think you look at these last 2 years, this year with Alonzo and Robert Woods being such a solid contributor coming out of that second round as well. And then the year before getting Cordy Glenn, who's already above league average starting left tackle in his second season. Hopefully those are signs of things to come in terms of the Bills draft not being limited to, all right, who's their day one pick? Let's get excited about that and then throw away for the rest. So
Which is,
although, let's face it, I'm also leaving out Jairus Byrd, and I should not do that because he was a second round pick and he turned out pretty well too.
That's absolutely true. I kind of forgot Jairus Byrd was a second round pick. I sort of
Why do I have a mental block on him? The 2009 draft that was ruined by He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Oh my god!
But behind him was
Wood, Le'Veon Bird,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, and Sean Nelson, who played some good years for us, and you know, is still around the league at least. You know, a good fourth wide receiver.
Yeah, I think he's sweeping a floor somewhere.
NFL offices,
the Jets locker room. Yeah.
Yeah, I had written in our pre days. Maybe I'll go to and find those articles that I wrote, because I never really finished them, because it's a never-ending progress. But I had gone through all the drafts from 2000 into about 2008 and looked at all the players they had drafted, looked at why they drafted them, and then looked at all the players they had missed on. And for a long time, that was the deal. And it's still kind of the deal with some people here and there, certainly. But I think under the Buddy Nix regime... and certainly if this is, you know, Doug Whaley's fingerprints on this draft, I think you have to feel kind of optimistic, right? You know, I mean, I think the jury's still out on EJ Manuel, but, you know, the Kiko Alonso is a great find.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think you brought up the key though, Frank. We're going to judge Doug Whaley as a drafter based on, and I know Buddy Nix still ran the draft last year, but it's going to be on how EJ does. Did you miss or make on your first stab at a franchise quarterback? If you can make that and then keep getting these types of contributors in other rounds, then we're going to have a very, very happy podcast for the next 10-15
years. Yeah. It'll also be a question of who else. That's one of those things. I love looking at the draft with Mario Williams, where the Texans took him first and everybody lost their mind because of Matt Leinart and Vince Young and two or three other guys who are no longer really playing in the NFL. You know, and it's one of those things where it's hard to look at the draft so close to where it is, and then you have to wait a couple of years just to see kind of how some of these guys pan out. It could be that AJ Manuel, and we don't hope this, but it could end up that he's not a very good quarterback and is not the answer. But if you look at this draft in 3 or 4 years and realize there really wasn't a quarterback that was the answer that year, maybe that lessens the blow a bit. Certainly you could have gotten somebody better, but if you really thought you needed a quarterback and that was your best option, okay, well, then that was just a bad year for quarterbacks, and maybe you hang it on Buddy Nix for not getting a quarterback the year before, or waiting another year to get the guys that are coming out this year. But it's a different question than you drafted EJ Manuel and you should have gotten Geno Smith, which is a laughable proposition at this point.
Let's hope it stays that way.
Let's go to the big story, which just kind of popped up this evening. Ohio.com and Buffalo Rumblings and a couple of other places have it that Mike Pettine, I'm saying that correctly, yes, Pettine, he's interviewing for the Browns head coaching job, which is the only job available. So he's going to go. They fired the Chud, Rod Chudzinski, from Cleveland, and Pettine will be going tomorrow, which will be today by the time you lot hear this, to interview for the Browns head coaching job. Pettine has a very good pedigree. He turned around and did a really good job with a bad defense this year. You know, we've sort of discussed some of their problems with stopping the run and some other stuff, but they
couldn't do anything last year. So
right, they did much better this year, and he injected a lot of promise. And there's only 32 of these head coaching jobs in the league, so they're very hard to turn down if somebody offers one. But Paul,
you're Bill Belichick, who turned down the Jets job, and he said, "I'm going to go coach the Patriots instead." But again, I think he's a once-in-a-lifetime mind.
He also only turned down the job to go to the Patriots. So
that's a good point. He already had another job. That's true. He was really choosing between two job offers.
Right. It wasn't like Major League where he had some walls to paint and he had to think about it.
Right.
But, Paul, you brought this up, or not brought it up, but you had mentioned, you know, this could really hamper the team. So why don't you give us your thoughts on the interview and what you
It's, you know, I had found out about this when you mentioned it, Frank, right at the beginning of this podcast. So, you know, I don't know if any defensive assistants on this staff are really capable of picking up where Mike Pettine left off. making sure that, you know, this aggressive style defense continues to work with the fixes in the run game is a huge asterisk there because they still really did struggle in that run game. But it was very encouraging how they played under Mike Pettine. And I definitely have a fear that without him around, we could see a regression, maybe not a regression of Juan Stedian proportions, but a regression to a defense that's not going to be able to help a young quarterback move a young offense and get them headed in the right direction to catch up to this defense. I don't know if you think differently on that, Scott, or if you have the same sort of thoughts about the potential.
Yeah, it's tough because I feel it is kind of hard to pinpoint exactly where the improvements in the defense came over the last 12 months. I mean, definitely some of it was Pettine, and some of it was getting Kiko, having four defensive linemen healthy for the entire season, four good defensive linemen healthy for the entire season. You know, Gilmore being better, Williams fitting in better at safety than he did. Some of the players that we've moved into position that have also helped improve the defense.
Yeah, McKelvin really stepping up this year after being kind of an average at best cornerback.
Absolutely. Getting Manny Lawson in and getting Jerry Hughes in, who have both... Well, was Lawson on the team last year?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
First year this year. In fact, if you read an article posted by Buffalo Bills maybe next year, you'll find Manny Lawson is the feature. You won't have to look hard.
Yeah, if you search
the article on the site.
If you search for articles, there's only one, and that's the one that mentions him. So
yeah.
Good plug.
Yeah. this is driving up the hit count right as we speak.
Two, three, four. Every time I hit refresh, more and more people are reading it. Five, six, seven. Sorry.
Hey, we got something like 120 reads on it, so now we have like 128.
Yeah. Absolutely. So the players, you know, it's not the X's and the O's, it's the Jimmy and the Joes. That's what the college coaches say. you guys have never heard that one?
No.
That's a good one.
I've not. Wow.
That's a good one.
Is that Coach Spurrier?
I feel like that's Holtz. I feel like Lou Holtz says that.
I didn't recognize it without the lisp or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Without like a huge
jowls coming out of
a huge ball of spit in my mouth that's pouring out. As the last,
it's not the X's and O's, just the Jimmy and Joe's.
Exactly.
I also fear that might be the motto of NAMBLA.
Okay. And Paul's NAMBLA reference. All right. Anyway. All right. But, you know, so there's two sides to it. I'm moving quickly on to the next subject, the next point, which is that I'm not sure what the impact is going to be, and I'm going to chicken out and say that. Because, honestly, I think having an aggressive defense is good, and it definitely worked for us this year in terms of having a blitzing defense that created a lot of turnovers and sacks, but we also got torn up in the run game too many times. And I feel like it's very hard to do both of those things. I feel like if you literally have, you know, Baltimore Ravens 2000 or Bears 1985 talent, then you can do that. But that's almost impossible to put together. Not that we're not getting in the ballpark of some of those good defenses, the amount of money and picks we've spent on our front seven and on our back four if we can hang on to Bird. But at this point, I don't think that we need to necessarily play quite an aggressive defense. So if we keep him, that's great. If we lose him and find somebody else who's good, whether it's an outside hire, I agree with you, Paul. I don't know anyone on this defense who's going to be able to pick up and carry off where Mike Pettine, you know, took over, but there's quality defensive coordinators out there I'm sure we can find. So I am less concerned at this point, although I could be an idiot in 12 months from now. So.
Could be.
Well,
I'm just, you guys have said what I wanted to say, so I just really won't comment other than to reiterate that, yeah, I don't know who would take over, and I would be worried. So I tend to think that the fact that I can't pinpoint exactly what they, you know, other than Kiko Alonso, who really picked up the middle of the linebackers, what did they do different other than be more aggressive? That's where the success came from, which to me speaks to scheme, which speaks to the defensive coach. But I mean, maybe you could go get Perry Fuel. He's been interviewing for a couple of things. He wasn't an awful defensive coach.
There are other guys who can run an aggressive defense.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's nice. It's cool to be able to design good blitzes, and Pettine is a good job at that, and we timed him pretty well. But there are other guys, I think, who can do that.
All right. Let's move now to our season recap.
The long-awaited.
The long-awaited some of the season recap, where we're going to talk about some of the, you know, we're going to do an extended three stars with a couple of wrinkles.
And we all get to have three stars, not just Scott this time.
Just suck it, Scott. We're going to
boo.
There's going to be 9 stars.
This is the unofficial three stars, if you ask me.
Although we could very easily get the same three stars.
I feel like there's a high chance of that.
Here's the thing. The fact that you're the official three stars doesn't mean anything unless there are unofficial three stars for
That's
you
true.
To combat against.
That's a good point.
I'm
the original.
Right. We're doing you a service by making, you know, our exactly. unofficial... I had a friend who wrote a short story about unofficial distance markers at voting places because he used to put up unofficial distance markers to give the official ones meaning. And the guy got mad because the unofficial distance ones are wrong. And he said, of course they're wrong.
They're unofficial.
Because they're unofficial, and that's what makes the official ones better. This is what exactly. So it was a very funny story the way he told
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So let's do this. Let's do three stars. Let's go around the table and internet table, Paul. And we'll each do. I'll start with the third star. Paul will start with the second star. And then Scott, you get to. No. I want to do that the other way. I want you to end up with the last say on
sure.
it, on these things.
Okay.
So you start with the third star, okay. and then we'll end up so that you'll have the final word on all the stars.
Right.
I'll direct traffic from here.
There's an idea. Okay.
But so he's the alpha and the omega.
Give us your first third. Give us your third star, and then Paul will give us a third star.
Okay. So I'm going to start with honorable mention. So screw you.
Oh.
Ah, fucking son of a bitch. So my honorable mentions are Nickell Robey, Robert Woods, and Dan Carpenter, who all chipped in with great effort this year.
The chip-in crowd.
Yeah. So, no, and I'm glad they were on the team. But this is not honorable mentions. This is three stars. So my actual...
You could have fooled me because you just made a whole point about honorable mentions.
All over here. Anyway, so my actual third star, which is the one that I think that I'm... Maybe you two didn't get, and we'll see, is Aaron Williams.
Yeah.
Is my third star
you know,
for the year.
I really... Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry, I'll stop interrupting and then comment later.
No, that's good. It's good that you're stopping. He played
the less you talk, the better.
He played 81% of the snaps on defense, which is what happens when your secondary is basically destroyed at about week 3, and he's one of the healthy guys left. But I think it also speaks to his improvement in the safety position. And he was talking in the offseason about how, since the offseason has begun, how much more comfortable he is at safety now, that he feels much more, like he's able to contribute to the team. He's definitely... grown more comfortable in the safety role than he was at cornerback, which is where we originally drafted him. He had 82 tackles and he had 4 interceptions. But I think putting him back there next to Gyrus, I think we had a really pretty good safety tandem, and they seem to be working well together. He's a good tackler for the most part, and it's good to see him coming, trying to find a role. And, you know, if you, you know, I think Buffalo News had him as one of the best surprises of the year so far. And so did ESPN had him in there kind of, you know, when they were looking at the safeties in terms of like, you know, they were like, well, we thought they'd have more depth with all these safeties that they drafted, but it didn't really matter because when Bird and Williams were back there, they were fine. So, so Aaron Williams, thanks for coming. And especially even more important with the, I think, likely pending departure of Gyrus Bird next
okay.
year.
Okay. Let me do the third star and then we'll go to you, Paul. My third star is Mario Williams. It's actually a toss-up between Mario Williams and Doug Marrone, but I'm going to make Doug Marrone my honorable mention because it's sort of cheating to pick a coach. But I did a 180 on Doug Marrone in a way that I never thought I would. I love the way he addressed the media and the way he spoke. I liked his philosophy that he seemed to espouse on the podium, and I liked how, you know, most of the results I saw from the team. So I was very happy with him. By the end, I tend to feel more comfortable. Somebody explained to me when you have turbulence on a plane, it's always really nice when the pilot explains, oh, we just were surprised by some, you know, they explain to you that it was a storm and you're going to be okay and you're going to fly. And I feel like that's how I feel about Doug Marrone. He was had a very calming influence, I feel like, on the team overall. Didn't take a lot of nonsense or anything, didn't look like a pushover or anything, but certainly didn't, you know, outside of, I think, in training camp, he had a blow up, but he didn't do that at all this year. He just sort of, you know, they have a system, they want to work it, and I feel like there were results on both sides of the ball that were positive, so I'm excited about that. But my actual third star is Mario Williams. the $94 million man. I wish he had finished a little stronger than the season, kind of matching where he had started. But that said, even with his sort of weaker finish, which was in part result to, I think, you know, teams sort of accounting for him a little bit differently than they had at the beginning of the year. You know, you can't laugh at, you know, 13 sacks is absurd. It's an excellent, it's one of the best years by a defensive end in recent Buffalo history, for sure. You know, and he just sort of finally established himself as the player that they kind of paid for. Again, should he have gotten like 17 sacks or 15 or 16 sacks? Probably. He probably had a couple more that he probably left a few on the table. And certainly by the end of the year, it was a bit of a different story. But to have his turnaround from last year, just his entire approach to the game and the way that the entire defense functioned, you know, not counted in all these in his stats or the number of times he got close to a quarterback or pushed a guy back and that forced a bad pass or an interception or disrupted a run play.
Right. It's like for a while, at a dry spell in my life, I had to count the number of times I got close to a woman.
Right.
A hookup.
Exactly.
So, and it's, you got to do the same with the sack situation.
Exactly. So, you know, I feel like he just had a really good year this year. And if he had stayed on pace, he would have had the second star and would have given my first star a run for his money. I've given it away. My first star is a man. But Paul, who did you have for your third star?
You know, I came... both those were almost in my third star slot, both Aaron and Mario Williams. I felt also now like taking Duke Williams just to keep the Williams theme going.
Not Kyle.
I played about 30 snaps, so I don't know if I could do that. My third star, I am going to move to Scott's third star's immediate right and choose Jairus Byrd. You know, he's one of those where you could justify putting him higher or you could justify putting him not on the list. Higher, I'll say you could put him not on the list because he only played 11 games this year and only started 9. But the reason you could put him higher is because what a huge difference maker he was for this defense when he was on the field. He was one of the team's top tacklers despite, you know, having limited playing time. Mm-hmm. He got his 4 picks. The reason he's one of the highest tacklers on the team is because he's a sure tackler. He always seems to be in the right spot. I can recall him missing missing 1 tackle this season, and that's pretty impressive. On a defense that didn't force a lot of fumbles, he got a fumble too. This is a guy who now, since he came into the league as a rookie, has just made big play after big play. I really think the defense will continue this ascension. I think a key part of that is to keep Jairus Byrd in the fold. I hope they can find a way to do it and make them all happy. I know they're worried about overpaying for a free safety, but this guy was really a difference maker this year, and even though only playing 11 games, I'd give him the third star.
Okay. Paul, give us your second star, and then we'll have Scott give us his second star.
Certainly, I would be glad to. So my second star, I'm moving over to the offensive side of the ball, and I am going to take number 22. I'm going to take Mr. Frederick Jackson, Frederick Stonewall Jackson. So the reason you look at the numbers and you say, let's say he had fewer yards than C.J. Spiller. He had less yards per carry than C.J. Spiller. So why is he this high? And I think you have to factor in that, you know, just the guts this guy showed. He played hurt, you know.
Intangibles.
Yes, exactly. He played hurt pretty much all of this season. He still totaled 1,177 total yards between rushing and receiving. He got a ton of touchdowns. He always seemed to find a way in the end zone. I remember that touchdown reception against Atlanta where he just bowled through everyone. You hand that to him, the ball inside the 5-yard line, he usually found a way to get in. The Chiefs game being the unfortunate lone exception there. And just what a leader he is and how this team has, you know, this team's offense seems to go as Fred goes. And he was very consistent this year. And when he was controlling the ball, when he was running it, this offense seemed to be very successful. So he's my number 2.
I'm actually calling an audible and taking the snap here from Scott because I also picked Fred Jackson as my number 2 star. And largely for the reasons that you state, he only had a few more carries than C.J. Spiller. I'm really trying to look at the question of why I feel like he was so much better than C.J. Spiller when the numbers really don't show that or don't bear that out. I think that it's a question of managed expectations. you know, it's a completely different question when your 30-plus-year-old running back who's getting extended through 2014 kind of steps up and does just about the same amount of work as the young guy who's supposed to really supposed to carry this team. So the reason why, you know, Spiller isn't higher on this list for me is because more was expected of Spiller. Spiller did not live up to those things. The fact that they're equal running backs is good because I think they're both good running backs. The problem is CJ Spiller at this age, at this time in his life, is supposed to be a great running back. And Fred Jackson is supposed to be an average to slightly above average running back and back up CJ Spiller. So you can't look at it as a question of, well, they're sort of indistinguishable running backs. Fred Jackson this year, if all was going according to plan, was probably supposed to get 25 to 35% of the workload, and CJ Spiller was supposed to get the rest. And that didn't happen. They split it more or less 50-50, or really, you know, 45-45 with 10% going to fullbacks and you know, Tashard Choice. May he find work once again, Tashard Choice.
Actually, he was the backup for the Colts in the playoffs. So
that's
right. Some work.
That's right. He was. He was an excellent Tashard for them. But yeah, so for me, you're right. He stepped up and basically did a starter's work when he wasn't supposed to be a starter, as far as I'm concerned. So that's why he gets the second star, because I think that this team would have been, certainly with all the room for improvement there is in the offense, there would have been that much more of a problem if the team was relying on CJ Spiller throughout the year, right, when he couldn't play.
And hopefully if Scott has him as a star somewhere, we have not stolen all of the things we could possibly say
about
Fred
Jackson.
All the
nice things to say about Fred Jackson.
Right.
Well, he's not the second star.
Oh, okay.
Because my second star is probably your guy's first star, but I have it as Kiko.
Okay.
And I don't have Kiko as the second star or as the first star because, frankly, he wasn't perfect. Like, he was great. He was exceeded expectations. He was the cornerstone of the defense for the most part. Not a great defense, let's be clear, in part because he wasn't perfect and he had some things to work on. He, you know, overran some plays. I think he didn't get quite as better, as we were saying, as the season got on. Maybe that's some of the inside linebackers coach's fault. Who's to say? Someone probably did on the Bills coaching staff, and that's why Driesback's not there anymore. But, you know, Kiko's definitely played fantastic, but he was not perfect. And frankly, you know, he can be pretty gosh darn close to perfect by the end of next season, which I'm fully expecting him to be the first star next season. But yeah, so I have Kiko at the second star. Everyone knows what he did this year. We talked about him earlier. There's no real point in droning on about how awesome Kiko is, because that's what you guys are for.
Well, I'll start off the first star then with, yes, Kiko Alonso, the legend of Kiko Alonso grows. Do we need to talk about him a lot? No, but I think I ought to defend his position as the first star in that I don't know that the defense would have been the defense without him. He's been the linchpin. The problem with this defense for the last X number of years, they've had guys on the line that have been good. They've had cornerbacks that have been good. They've had safeties that have been good. They've had tackles that have been good. I can't remember the last time I felt like they had a good linebacker, like a proper good linebacker. Not like Kavika Mitchell, who kind of knew what he was doing, but wasn't all that great. Not Paul Posluszny, who had the promise of being a good linebacker, but never really delivered. Not, you know, London Fletcher was
as far back as we'd have to go.
Right.
6 years there.
Right.
6-7 years.
And the fact that I'm putting him in the same sentence as London Fletcher, which he's not London Fletcher yet, but the fact that I'm putting him in the same sentence as London Fletcher is a huge deal as far as I'm concerned. And that's why he's the first star, because he really is. He connected those two fronts. He is the Middle America. He is the transatlantic telegram between
the Golden Spike.
He is. He's connected the East and the West. He's like Walk This Way with both Public Enemy and
Aerosmith.
Or, I'm sorry, Run DMC and Aerosmith. Yeah. That was terrible. Yeah. Wow. I lost all my cred there.
You're just a racist. We understand.
You're right. All Boston rock bands look the same to me. No.
Whereas I would have said, it was Run DMC in Boston, because all white bands look the same.
Exactly.
All white bands from Boston.
I watched a whole documentary about the making of that song. Well, it was like 20 minutes of the best Why We Love the 80s documentary, which is actually not that bad. Rob Lowe narrates it.
I go on another tangent about comparing things?
No, there's no tangents in this podcast. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Inappropriate comparisons, seeing as we were just comparing like an inside linebacker for the Bills to the transatlantic telegram and the railroad that, you know, unified
the union,
you know,
right.
The United States. Have you guys seen that commercial?
Why he has the hashtag, by the way, of the legend of Kiko.
Exactly.
Alonso.
He was actually there when the spike was driven. Right. He drove it, and then he sacked it for a 4-yard loss. But if you guys seen that, like, it's like a Mazda commercial or something where it's like they're talking about like Marilyn Monroe or something, or some actor or actress, and then or maybe John Wooden or somebody, like somebody fairly famous and well respected, and then Frank Lloyd Wright. And then Jackie Robinson.
Right.
And then they compare that to this car.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, so you're comparing one of the most important figures for like racial integration in the history of the country.
Right. One of the most visionary architects.
Exactly.
Right.
And this other famous person to the people who built this car.
Yeah. They are.
Okay.
That's what car companies do.
I just want
to be clear. The other one to look out for, which is a little, it's not quite as blatant, but it's the Bing commercial. Where they talk about all they showcase all these women, and she did this, and it's like really famous women. It ends with like it's like kind of contemporary. It ends with like Janet Yellen breaking down barriers and stuff. And then it's like search with Bing, which is only a little less offensive than that car commercial because they're not sort of saying like we're breaking down barriers. They really sort of took the time to just say like let's talk about women who've broken down barriers.
Exactly. Just kind of, we're putting ourselves in this company, but it's on a subconscious level,
right,
as opposed to explicitly stating we are doing the same thing that Jackie Robinson had did.
Right.
The next, if there's one message we want to give to Bing and to Mazda here, very simple: boobs. Boobs have worked for years in advertising.
Right.
Why
just
are
boobs.
We going away from this and trying to make these big, broad statements?
The moment a car is nailed to a cross, it'll be too much. I might delete that. That's actually like...
No, I think everyone would be on board with that.
Right. Because just in case anyone gets offended, the point was that would be really terribly stupid to do.
No one could
right.
support
that. Would not be appropriate
thing.
On any level. That's why it was funny.
That's why.
Here lies
right.
Mazda, king of the sports cars.
Right.
Now, Paul, on the other hand.
Paul's gone too far now. If you want to direct anger at Paul, go for it. I had a long, this is the end of the tangent, by the way, but I did have a long but productive conversation with someone about the reason jokes about inappropriate behavior are funny is because you are not making the inappropriate behavior okay.
Yes.
We might have talked about this on the podcast before.
I don't know if we did, but I agree.
But when you watch The Office, the reason Steve Carell as Michael Scott can say kind of offensive things and everyone laughs is because the joke is about him, about what a moron he is.
Yes.
And that's different than you know, so that's why that commercial idea would be a stupid idea. That's why it's funny, because the joke is about we all understand that it's a stupid idea.
Exactly.
Not, you know, it would be funny to do that.
Yes.
So it's subtle.
Then you get into the Robin Thicke thing with his video and like, well, you are, this may be satire, but it is the very thing it is satirizing, which is what Scott had brought to my attention.
Yeah, I think that's actually, that is something that we might have talked about. Anyway.
But we'll discuss this on our next podcast, maybe next humor philosophical debate.
And commercials
yeah. In America.
Yep. Wow, now this completely takes the wind out of the sails of my first star, because I have no lead-in for it. But I think I'll do my best here.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, the first star of Frank's, which is also a star of Scott, not on my list of three stars. Great
Lester
Alonso.
I like it.
Very happy with his development, but didn't put him there. Hmm. And that being said, I think my first star I'm about to pick here might not be on either of your lists unless it's Scott's first star.
Uh-oh.
It's not.
Going to the defensive side of the ball, Kyle Williams is my first star for the
Buffalo
Bills.
You're a Kyle Williams guy, so that makes sense.
I am. I have a history of liking fat white dudes. It's just how I roll.
Yeah.
This is a guy. He's you can talk about his career year in the pass rush with 10.5 sacks. You can talk about the fact that he was a tackle machine this year, even more so than he's been in the past. As I had the stats right in front of me, 68 combined tackles, 42 of them. 42 of them solo and 16 assisted. I mean, that is just phenomenal for a defensive line to put up those types of numbers. He drew the respect of Bill Belichick In due respect, league-wide, first of all, it's the first time he was elected to the Pro Bowl. It's his third trip there, but he was injury replacement twice. He was elected to the Pro Bowl. Bill Belichick said he's practically unblockable. He was constantly in the backfield disrupting plays. With him on this front four, we talked about what Scott was inquiring before, like what is it that's made this defense so much better from over the last 12 months? And I think you can point to how Kyle Williams has helped to flourish in this defense to why it was so much better. So Kyle Williams, you are my number one star.
Awesome.
All right. Just in case Paul didn't know, he was actually ranked as the number one defensive lineman in the league by Pro Football Focus when they do their advanced metrics.
I did not, or I definitely would have added that in my argument. Yes, so and actually, thank you for bolstering that.
No problem. And Kiko Alonso was the number one linebacker in their rankings.
Look at that. A pair of number ones.
But you're both wrong.
Okay.
Because the number one star is Fred Jackson.
Fred wins the award for getting stars from all of us.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Fred has the highest overall star ranking.
Absolutely. I mean, Kyle made a late push, but he could not put himself into the lead there. And I agree with everything Paul said, except for the fact that the problem is that Kyle's been on the team for the last 6 years, and they've had horrible defenses the whole time. And this year they were better, and I think Kyle has played better and had a career year, but I can't put it all on Kyle, because if he was just that good, we would have had that good of a defense the last 5 years. So, no, I mean, Kyle played great and had a good season and definitely deserves to be on the list of stars.
I think we can all agree that there are people that are not on our individual list Absolutely. That are deserving of stars. So there's no...
Yeah, I look at Aaron Williams, Kiko Alonso, Mario Williams, all stars that you guys picked. Great players, glad to have him on the team.
Right.
But none of those, but yes, but my list is the correct list, and that's why Fred is the first. So anyway, no, but Fred, no, I mean, you guys talked about him before, so it doesn't need to go on forever. But yeah, no, I mean, I think if you took any one guy out of the defense, and we did take a couple guys out of the defense for various points there this year, and they still would have done about the same in my end, because at the end of the day, they were still a terrible run defense. Like, they still had huge problems stopping the run, and it was not that bad. And, you know, yeah, you could take a couple guys out of the offense and it would still be a terrible offense. If you took Fred Jackson out of the offense, we would have had a horrific offense that would have been like league worst, like first round, you know, first overall pick worst offense. So that's why I think Fred Jackson stays in addition to the kind of intangibles and leadership and things that, again, if I'm judging myself by my own criteria, have not been important the last couple of years when we've also had losing records and crap offenses. But you know, at the same time, I think this year he was even more important given the amount of change that happened in the offense. So
he did seem like the only thing between the team and the abyss on offense. So, yeah, I mean, really,
for parts of the year. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely, like
more so than any other guy.
He was standing on the bridge of Khazan Dune with his staff. Yes,
thou shalt not pass.
Exactly. Well, that was an invigorating episode of Three Stars, but now we have to move on to Three Goats, which is something we only do at various points in the year. Maybe we should introduce it next year, a nice wrinkle. Maybe we'll just, Goat of the Week, like worst
performance. Just one,
Maybe just one. Yeah. But for the end of the year, I think we can come up with three. Instead of going round robin, let's just do all three of ours at once.
Blurt it out.
So let's let Paul go first.
Sure. I will go through them quickly because these are people I do not want to talk about very much.
Okay.
Number three on my list of goats, a guy who is thankfully not on the roster anymore, I went with Justin Rogers.
Okay.
You can say, how can I pick a guy who is cut relatively early in the season or about halfway, stopped playing relatively early in the season, then was cut a little over halfway through the season after being active for like five or six straight games? You can look at those losses to the Jets and Browns and really pin those largely on Justin Rogers' inability to cover receivers deep. That's things I got to pay on him, and that makes him a big goat in my eyes. I'll move through these quickly. Number two in my mind, I had a tough time picking between these two, so I've just classified the number two goat as right side of the O-line, and that is Craig Urbick and Eric Pierce. The reason why I singled these two guys out, or doubled these two guys out, if you will, both of these guys had signed long-term contract extensions recently, one last year, one the year before, and yet both were below average at their positions. They both struggled in pass protection, and they were both terrible at opening up the run game, especially when you look at the numbers about how the Bills rushed to over right guard and over right tackle and making C.J. Spiller look like he couldn't run anymore and bottling up Fred Jackson for big losses. They, to me, were big disappointments and a reason why Manuel didn't develop as much. And my number one season goat, a guy who on a personal level we feel very bad for, but just looking at the overall body of work, I had to go with Stevie Johnson, a guy who is really who's gets number one receiver money, but who is not a force after week two at all, who had to have a sit-down talking to from his coach, who's making $8.5 million this coming year, and who gave up on a number of plays, that interception against Kansas City where he got open. That was a brilliant move, and then he just stood in the back of the end zone. He was really the only man on the field who had a chance of catching the Chiefs. Chiefs cornerback trying to run the end zone, especially with Marquise Goodwin off the field. He was the only guy I could think would catch him. It was disappointing. With the money you pay him and with the leadership role you expect him to take as your team's de facto top receiver right now, I would label him as the biggest disappointment, the biggest goat.
Let me go next then, because my third goat was Stevie Johnson, and largely for all the reasons you mentioned. As Steve pointed out on Facebook, there's different ways to look at who the GOAT or the worst player should be. Is it actually the worst player, in which case you'd name the three people who got cut through the season, or is it the people who is the expectations? And, you know, I left it open so we could all have something different to talk about, hopefully, because there certainly were plenty of room to disappointment. Stevie Johnson, exactly like you're saying. Yeah, okay, he had a very rough end of the year personally, but you know what? The body, that doesn't explain weeks 2 through 10. And it doesn't explain... you know, necessarily why he didn't get back out on the field and play. That's kind of a mean thing to think about, but a lot of players go and do that. They go out and they play because they get to a point where they understand that this is something that they can do. Marcell Dareus last year, you know, his brother died, and that was pretty gross. And he missed a game or two, and he didn't look great for the next game, but he was out there for the rest of the season.
He gutted it out, and he didn't play his best season. He played much better this year, but he was out there.
Brett Favre played, you know, and so it's not fair to hold him up against all the people who have played through adversity. But the point was that, like, he missed 3 weeks, you know. He was gone for three. He sort of just quit the season. And if that was the only time he quit the season, you would forgive him and you'd say, okay, he had a rough go of it, but he played really hard. The problem was, as Paul points out, he didn't look like he played very hard all year. And this is unfortunately a repeating theme with him, that you get the sense from Stevie Johnson that he has a certain amount of level of care that he has about football, and that's it. And it's not commensurate with how much money he's making. Which is disappointing, and I hate making that argument. I hate the argument of, well, he gets paid to play better. You know, one of my thoughts in the offseason is that money's spent on Stevie Johnson. He's a receiver on the Buffalo Bills, like it or not. I'm hoping that next year we have a cheaper number one receiver, and he's just a really overpaid second receiver, because that's about the best you can hope for. But, yeah, Johnson was a disappointment. He could have gone anywhere from third to first. The second star I also split between the aforementioned Justin Rogers, who really cannot escape blame due to his terrible performance this year, and Doug Ligurski, largely for very similar reasons that you mentioned for the other two linemen. Ligurski, that side of the line was just bad. There were pockets of the line that were bad, and for me, Ligurski was the face of... It's largely based on his name. He just has the name of a terrible football player. I got to be honest. He sounds like he's like... In the 70s, Doug Ligurski would be an all-pro guard. No doubt. Just based on name alone. The problem with Ligurski at this point is that he's just not very good. I don't want
to... A guy with the name Demansky trying to play
football. Exactly. Imagine a receiver named Demansky. That'd be terrible. Yeah. One catch for 6 yards on two targets, right? I mean, you can just...
Yeah, that might be one more catch than that guy had in his high school career.
Exactly. But my number one goat is based partially on the on-field stuff and partially on the fueled hatred I have for now Scott Chandler. Scott Chandler, if I could upgrade one position on the team, if really you said, Frank, you can make one thing better, and not just better, but you could have a good, solid player for 5 or 6 years at this position, I would choose tight end, and I would choose tight end 10 out of 10 times. I have a nice young quarterback on my team. I want a nice big target for him to throw to when he gets nervous or when protection breaks down. And Scott Chandler is really good at getting open and really terrible at catching the fucking football. He drives me nuts to no end. He's like Stevie Johnson light. Just when you expect him to do something good, he doesn't do. He just falls apart. And then he makes up for it in garbage time when no one is really paying attention to when he's getting his yards and his touchdowns. Just too many times I've seen him drop the ball and ruin drives. And I think if you were to look at Scott Chandler and do a baseball type analysis on him, he'd be like a negative one WAR player. He would literally have cost the team a game or two.
Do you want to know what his DVOA is?
Please go ahead.
I have it here. If it would just come up quickly. He was ranked number 33 in tight ends.
Out of 32 teams.
Out of 32 teams, which means there's definitely at least two guys on one team who are both better than Scott Chandler in terms of, and this is his receiving, which is his strong suit.
Right.
And I looked.
We're not even talking about his blocking yet.
His blocking, which I went to Pro Football Focus and they had him on, I think he only pass blocked on like 24 snaps this year. So the pass blocking clearly is not his strong suit. But just on his receiving.
And how terrible is that, while you're looking that up?
Yes.
That the team knows that when he's on the field for a pass, he's going to be a receiver. That you know he's not going to block you.
It's terrible.
Except that 1.5 times a game, he will block. But right. The rest, that's it.
Exactly. Those are good odds.
If you get that out of the way in the first quarter, right. you already know.
Right. If you're a lineman looking to go after the quarterback, you run at the tight end because that's what we call a good bet. You're going to hit that number.
And actually, it's actually not going to. He's going to block once. He's going to half block three times.
That's exactly
what's going to happen. But he was actually negative 1.2% in DVOA in terms of his individual receiving, defensive value.
He costs this team at critical junctures, and I hate him. I'm done with him. I don't care that he has the name of a guy on Friends.
I agree. No, it's 100%. And he's also 28th in defensive yards adjusted. So that means it's as DVOA is based on a per play basis. You might say, oh, well, that's why he's 33rd. There's some guy with 151 snaps who, caught three touchdowns in the red zone. But in terms of defensive yards adjusted, which talks about like how many yards over the course of the season, so the guys who played more snaps have more credit there, he's still 28th in the league.
Yeah.
There are still 27 tight ends who are better than him, which makes him not just an average tight end, makes him a bad tight end.
A well below average tight end.
Exactly.
A probably shouldn't be starting tight end.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure he can start for some teams that have three good options elsewhere.
I would have a hard time deciding whether I wanted him or Robert Royal.
It's a fair point. I mean, Royal at least caught the ball sometimes.
Sometimes.
Anyway.
Three goats for Scott.
For Scott. I will go quickly because we've already talked about some of these guys. I had Chandler on the list. He's probably number two for me. I had, Cug LeBrown. I had the combination of Colin Brown and Doug Ligurski.
Brown. I felt like Ligurski just made me angrier, so yeah. I went with him.
But we cut Brown, so that problem is solved. So, so that left guard kind of smoking hole. I picture that as more of a smoking hole, whereas the right side of the line was just shoddy.
Smoking hole is the name of our new...
Smoking hole is a tough term for us not to laugh at, 12-year-old boys.
Yeah.
And then I did pull a Dan Le Batard and I gave my first overall goat to anyone on Facebook who wanted it and made the most compelling case for it, which was Steve, as per usual. And Steve came up with some of these lists and talked about Chandler and some of those guys. But Steve, I think he wanted to give it to Manuel.
And so
that's who gets my pick as the goat of the year.
He's such a Thad Lewis apologist, though.
And that's fine. But honestly, all opinions are valid because God knows Steve probably watches more football than us at this point. So
that's true.
Steven took my first pick,
right?
And so now he picked EJ.
Okay,
and it's one of those things where this is what happens when you give your picks to the masses. Maybe personally you wouldn't agree with it, but that's fine.
All right, honestly,
there's a very compelling case for EJ.
Please make the compelling case for it.
Which was he was injured a lot, and some of those were his own fault because of plays that he shouldn't have been trying to make. He was trying to be too aggressive in that Cleveland game, and it cost him 4 weeks, and that's what you have to do when you're a quarterback is you have to put the team in front of yourself, and you have to think through these things, and that really hurt the team. He didn't have the chance to build a lot of chemistry with his backups, but when he was in, it was clear he did not have great communication with some of the other wideouts. He looked like he was okay with Woods, but in terms of Stevie or some of the other guys, he was not quite on the same page with. And then, you know, he did, you know, as Steve says, he did show some very good flashes, but in general, he was not good overall. And basically what I'm saying is that we've eliminated the one path, which is EJ Manuel was the Russell Wilson, the Andrew Luck, the guy who was stone cold stunner and
just going to come in and
now we fixed our quarterback problem. So out of the 32 quarterbacks in the league, 5 or 6 are those guys who came in their first league. You knew right away they were the guys and they could take care of it. Now out of those other 28, how many of those guys who are still in the league, you know, if you just want to talk about the starters, how many of those guys, you know, now we're into the point where, okay, they weren't good in their first league. Now, can they turn into a good quarterback? And there's plenty of examples of guys who did turn into good in quarterbacks. Peyton Manning obviously played horrible his first year in Indianapolis. He went on to be Peyton Manning. There are also guys like Ryan Leaf who played horrible their first year and continued to play horrible for the rest of their careers. So now we have shrunk the pool of options as to where EJ Manuel is going. And now there's a slightly higher chance based on the fact, you know, in the past, if you're going to be good quarterback, there's a slightly higher chance you're going to be a good quarterback in your first year. So if you want to talk about a GOAT, there is a compelling case, I think, for EJ to be on that GOAT list.
It's a little disconcerting to have your first round draft pick as your first GOAT.
Franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
It is terrible to think about, but in 2 years, this could be...
Well, it's nothing we've not really seen.
Exactly. Before, I mean, so. At this point, yeah, it's just a question of what draft pick we raced it on the quarterback who ended up failing for
right.
us.
Right. Well, let's hope that's not a trend. I think that you're right, that there's a case that this year he was the GOAT, but... or a GOAT, if not the GOAT. But that doesn't preclude you from becoming a good player later. So we've gone quite long. We're happy that we're going to do a little more chatting, but we're going to save some more of our season wrap-up for next week.
Including predictions also.
Week we're going to talk about how our predictions panned out. Surprisingly, we were all pretty close, including one person who hit it on the nose, as we like to say, but let's save that for then. We're going to talk about some of the positions we'd like to replace, some draft stuff that we're thinking about. It's all going to be very...
a little more off-season focused.
A little more off-season focused.
Positions we want to fix, people we need to move out.
Right. Yeah. As we
it's
gear up...
It's amazing how much more we can fill the podcast when we actually prepare in advance and write things down that we are not just BSing for an hour. It's amazing how time flies.
It's pretty ridiculous. So we should probably do this more often where we think about it before we come here. So we're going to do that. So just to give you a heads up on the schedule, we're going to do a podcast next week, and then we're going to do a post-Super Bowl podcast, which will be the final episode of Season 2 of Buffalo Bills maybe next year. We promise you a big cliffhanger. No,
Paul's
not
pregnant.
Paul's... No, that's not the cliffhanger. It's
I'm going to pee out a baby.
It's who impregnated Paul. That's the cliffhanger. but before we close up, let's talk about... It's already going to be a long podcast, so hope you got a big commute today, guys. But let's talk about the NFL playoffs and this day in Bills history. Paul, give us this day in Bills history. I have a good guess as to what your game's going to be.
I bet you do, because it was 20 years ago today, and
Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play. Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad that you know I was there, because I've mentioned it several times. It means I don't have to retell the whole story. Go ahead.
I know. I've actually listened to you. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Go ahead.
Waste of my brain space. No. We're going to go back to January 15th, 1994. A crowd of 61,923, including Frank, were dutifully warned of...
And my dad was there.
And yes, Mr. Senior Frank. I can't remember your dad's name. How terrible.
Senior.
It's Vince.
Vince, that's right.
Me and Vince.
Yes. It was the...
Freezing our nuts off.
At that time, it was the fifth coldest game in NFL history. Now it ranks as the ninth coldest game in NFL history. Temperature at the start of that game was 0 degrees with a wind chill of 32 below. And the Buffalo Bills edged out the then Los Angeles Raiders 29-23 to advance to the AFC title game. It was their fourth consecutive AFC title game. This game, the conditions were so bad, it featured 3 failed point after conversions, 2 by the Bills and Steve Christie and 1 by the Los Angeles Raiders. Both quarterbacks, Jim Kelly and Jeff Hostetler, played very well, high completion percentages. But the Bills had trailed early.
Yes, they
were
did.
Down 17-6 and 23-22 at points. And they were trailing 17-13 when defensive coordinator Walt Corey decided to change fronts, went to an eight-man front. The Raiders shortly thereafter got an 86-yard touchdown, but otherwise gained about 5 yards the rest of the game. So that allowed the Bills to come back, make a difference. Ken Hull quote about the game afterwards, said it was a great day to play football, and then he stopped and thought about the weather and said, well, maybe it wasn't that great a day. Marv Levy trying to empathize with the Raiders said, I know the heartbreak of losing a game like that because the Bills had wiped out, you know, an 11-point deficit and then a 1-point fourth-quarter deficit. And the Baltimore Sun, in praising the Bills, called the Buffalo Bills one of the best teams of their time.
They were.
They certainly were. I won't go through the play-by-play recap. I thought about doing that, but, you know, we're long, and that tends to be the least interesting thing. You want the play-by-play recap. Feel free to go to the box.
It was actually covered pretty extensively this week, actually, as an anniversary game. I saw it in a couple of different places.
Yeah, as it should. So you got plenty of places to.
And also with the parallel with the Green Bay game.
Exactly, yeah.
It's going to be for
right. And I think it's an underrated game because we talk about some of those playoff games from that era, and everyone remembers the 51-3 game against the Raiders, the couple that were against the Dolphins, the big win over the Chiefs in the AFC title game. This was really a phenomenal football game that I remember watching. So go back, you know, read about it. It was really exciting. Bill Brooks played a phenomenal game for Buffalo that day as he almost became the featured receiver on the playoffs that year.
If I remember right, it was
this day 20 years ago. The Bills advanced the AFC title game, beating the Raiders 20. Now I've forgotten the score already. Beating the Raiders 29-23.
It was Jeff Hostetler, right? Jeff Hostetler was the quarterback. Yeah. I remember that. Super Bowl champ, Jeff Hostetler. And I was happy to beat him. I also remember being really impressed with how well the quarterbacks threw the ball because they were missing extra points. And there were some bombs. That was a Raiders team that was stacked with, like, Tim Brown. Might have been Rocket Ismail. Might have been a little before Rocket Ismail. But they had receivers that were literally built, kind of like they built Raiders teams since, to throw the ball long. Like, their job is to get open for 50, 60 yards. Like, that was how they were built. And the fact that they were able to do anything in that weather on both sides of the ball, Kelly as well. Kelly and the Bills did a great job throwing the ball as well. Was amazing to me. I was really impressed because I could not feel my fingers. I had, you know, whatever. I've said it before. I had the skin warmer stuffed inside my hands and my boots. We threw snowballs at Mike Ditka, who was an ass. And it was I've never been so cold in my life, like freezing condensation on your lip cold. It was an excellent game. So I was glad that it was written about and that you brought it up. I had a good feeling you would do that. Playoffs. It was a good playoff weekend.
Trivia?
Oh, was there trivia?
No, I didn't have any trivia this week. It's all right. Save your witty answer for next week, Scott.
All right.
I'll come up with a good one.
It was a good weekend of football, depending on what you were looking for.
Not if you were betting on underdogs.
Yeah, no, not if you were betting on underdogs. That said, the one team I really, really wanted to win, Denver, did win. I really, really wanted the Colts to win too, but that wasn't going to happen. As my wife is sad in the background.
There's the sad trombone.
That was a messed up game because obviously the Colts turned over the ball early, which you never want to do with the Patriots, but they had no, they just like, I love Bill Belichick now because I hate him because he literally didn't care that it was an unglamorous game plan. He didn't care that his star quarterback was upset. He was like, the offensive, him and Josh Daniels pretty much said, well, they haven't stopped us once when we run to the left. We can get 5 yards, we can get 10 yards, we can get 2 yards, we can get whatever the hell we want. And they just did that the whole game. Mm-hmm. LeGarrette Blount, 4 touchdowns, thankfully has a game more impressive than the one he ran against the Bills.
Yeah.
We are no longer the LeGarrette Blount highlight film. Yeah. But 5 rushing touchdowns, they just sort of, they were a one-trick pony against the Colts, I think. I'm sure it'll be different against Denver this weekend. Denver had a scare against San Diego. I'm sure Broncos fans were having flashbacks about the Ravens game the year before when a game they should have won was taken away, but this time they kind of put it away, which was nice to see. What did you guys think of the AFC or the NFC games?
It's kind of, for me, it's kind of unique that this is the year that we don't have the kind of wild card, the one that snuck in, you know, the six right. seed or the four seed who was,
I thought that it could have been hot. San Diego. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Who could got hot at the right time. But I think, you know, as someone's, I think Joe Buck said on Sunday at the end of the last game, is like, if you asked people for the four best teams in the league, they would have said San Francisco, Denver, Seattle, and New England, and no one would have argued
yeah.
you.
Even if you'd asked them that at the beginning of the year, they might have said that, you know?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of hard to argue with how it came out. I'm a little surprised that Denver, you know, I mean, San Diego was definitely in that game in the end. I'm not sure that they were trying as hard the whole time, or there was some scheme that makes me worried about their chances this weekend against New England. Honestly, like,
I feel the exact opposite, but that's okay.
Okay. I mean, I obviously am rooting for Denver. Like, if there was one thing I wanted to have this happen this last weekend, it was for New England to lose. Like, I don't care about as much about the other teams. Like,
right.
I would, even if that meant like Russell Wilson losing, I much rather would have the Patriots losing. And I obviously will be rooting hard for the Broncos, but I don't like how things are lining up for the Broncos. They're just not hitting their stride at right time. Their run defense isn't that great. Manning's not playing as well. They obviously have that kind of, at this point, it doesn't matter how many points they're up, because they will never get that horrible loss that they had when they were up 31-0 or whatever it was at midseason, and the Patriots came back and won. Like, they'll never be far enough out ahead to where they'll be able to relax. And I think it's going to get in their heads, and I'm worried that the Pats are going to go to the Super Bowl because of it. But, you know, obviously,
well, they've lost Super Bowls before.
That's true. And the NFC, those look like two pretty strong teams. Honestly, I think San Francisco is playing even better than Seattle at this point, but I still think Seattle wins that game this weekend just because they're at home. I don't like Kaepernick, but he's playing pretty well right now, and I'm surprised that game was going all Carolina the first half, and then suddenly, like, the Niners kind of snuck in that last touchdown in the last 2 minutes, and that just took the win out of Carolina's
yeah.
scales. Another young team that maybe hasn't quite put it all together, and we'll see how they end up next year. But San Francisco is not a young team. They're a veteran team with a coach who's a douchebag but is a good coach.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, I don't want to say a war, but that's going to be an intense football conflict next weekend in Seattle.
It's going to be tough. And you know, I'm very happy if Seattle wins. If San Francisco wins, they're certainly deserving, you know. So I
and
think
both that, those teams can beat the Patriots.
Right. That's the other thing. You know, both those teams definitely can beat the Patriots. I think the good news is there's no combination of those four teams that's a bad Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I think all four of those teams are excellent football teams, and it'll be a real interesting result one way or the other. I'm sure the networks are rooting for probably rooting for San Francisco, New England, because the other two teams are the smaller market Midwestern. Seattle's not Midwestern, but they're kind of in the Siberia of the U.S. Paul, what did you think of the games? Sorry, didn't mean to.
No, it's all right. You guys were actually interesting, so I didn't mind.
Oh, good.
good
podcasting. Yeah,
look at the NFC games. I think there were two people who stood out to me, both because they're kind of jerky, but also because what exceptional games they played. Anquan Boldin for San Francisco.
Yeah.
Just wow. You see how much his absence hurt the Ravens this year, and you look at how successful San Francisco was with him in the lineup. He will get under your skin, and then he will go and just make big plays on you all day. So nothing against Kaepernick, who is obviously a difference maker, but he really stood out to me, as well as Vernon Davis, a tight end. Mm-hmm. Seattle, Marshawn. I mean, we had him here. We know how unpredictable he can be.
God. Every time I see him, I just...
He looks like
I
a
cry.
Different guy, though. He's not even the same back sometimes. Like, I saw him shake some guys on Sunday, and I was like, I don't remember ever making him.
Well, you only
like
had to
that.
Stick with him for, like, another week, and he would have had that.
I guess.
That was it. We were just like, we gave up on him way too quick.
Yeah.
Thanks,
so
Chin.
I think people are going to focus on the quarterbacks in the NFC title game, but I think those are two players who I expect to make a difference. And then looking at Patriots and Broncos, one is a Bills fan. I was encouraged to see LeGarrette Blount have another great game. I feel less bad about what he did to us. So that was encouraging. I think it's tough to beat Peyton Manning in Denver. I think the Patriots are going to put up a hell of a battle, but they were not a great road team this year. Remember, they were 500 team on the road, and they didn't face any teams as good as the Broncos on the road. I'm optimistic that it's gonna be a close game. Let's face it. They've played 14 games against each other. None of them have been blowouts. Not a single one. So I would expect this to go right down to the wire, and I think it's going to be the Broncos who pull it out.
I'm hoping for that too. And if you look at their, if you look at their three other playoff matchups, if you look at the Brady Manning thing, which is sort of a false association given that these are different teams and whatnot, but the home team has always won for those quarterbacks. It's always been the home field advantage in each of those cases has been a big deal. So it'll be exciting. It'll be a good football game, I'm sure. I think the good news is Denver beat a tougher team in San Diego than the Patriots beat in the Colts. The Colts have a very obvious flaw that the Chargers really didn't have.
Players.
Right, exactly. And those the Chargers players. Have a lot more than that, actually. They're kind of a savvier team, you know, relying on, you know, like a Phillip Rivers. He's a great quarterback. He really is. He's not a perfect quarterback. But anyway, I think Denver, if you believe in things like shaking stuff off and momentum, I think that they got a monkey off their back this week, and they really sort of have the, you know, they're going to be able to say, we're not, you know, Peyton can go in there and say, it's not all about, you know, getting, you know, bounced early, et cetera, et cetera. He's got a real opportunity to win. And if you're talking about legacies and stuff, which it's stupid because there's no reason to doubt his veracity as a quarterback or his greatness as a quarterback, but getting to the Super Bowl one more time would certainly help in the eyes of a lot of people. He has nothing to prove to anyone, but you know, I'd like to see it, and I think it definitely could happen. Certainly the Broncos are a more complete team than the Colts. The other side of the Super Bowl, Seattle looks like an impossible place to win if you're on the road. I don't understand how that became the loudest, most craziest place in the universe, but it certainly has.
They built the stadium that way.
I guess that's it. And they play very well at home. So I think that's a bit of a coin flip, but I would give the edge to Seattle. And as far as I'm concerned, the enduring legacy of Chan Gailey is how good the Seahawks are. Marshawn Lynch has been exactly who Marshawn Lynch has always been. It's just that, you know, instead of Dick Geron refusing to run him, and Chan Gailey insisting on his own running back, they've decided to use him, and he's the exact same running back. You saw things that he was shaking guys off, but you know he was always able to push guys and get guys out of the way and do things. I've always liked him, other than he was a little bit of a knucklehead. Anyway.
Yeah, so I think
I think it's going to be Seattle Denver.
Yeah, I'm wavering on my New England kind of pick. I mean, I think Seattle's going to win. That New England Denver game, I just don't have good feelings. I mean, I feel like if Denver wins, I feel like it's going to be one thing where it's like, you know, there's some BS call in the fourth quarter that goes their way.
Good enough for me.
And yeah, which is definitely fine, and I'll take it. But I feel like that's how they win, something like that. So okay. I guess maybe. I don't know. No, I'll just take New England.
All right, that's fine.
Denver wins. I could see Denver winning too. Obviously, it's a very close game.
Okay. If you have thoughts about whether Denver or Seattle or New England or the other team, San Francisco.
Wait, did Paul make a...
Yeah, Paul said
yeah,
that
I
Denver.
Said Denver, and then I didn't really pick in the NFC, but I'm going to go with the upset, a mild upset, and say San Francisco.
It is. As hard as it is to win in Seattle, I don't think anyone thinks San Francisco can't do it. So, yeah. So, if you have different predictions, if you'd like to pick Carolina to win the Super Bowl, be sure to let us know on our Twitter feed. You can tweet Paul and pick your Carolina San Diego Super Bowl at BBillsMNY, twitter.com/BBillsMNY. If you search Buffalo Bills maybe next year on Facebook or on Twitter, or if you just punch it into Google, you're going to find us. You're going to find our podcast. You're going to find our WordPress blog. You're going to find our Facebook page. All going to be there. You just got to search maybe next year, or if you're in doubt, Buffalo Bills maybe next year. It's coming up, kids. You're going to find it. You're going to be able to interact with us. We're going to have good times. You can leave comments on our iTunes. You can get involved in the show. Season 2 is wrapping up. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl next week and our Super Bowl picks. And then after the Super Bowl, and we're going to do a little more season wrap up. And then the last episode is just going to be, it might be a complete shit show. It might just be, let's talk about the Super Bowl for a bit, and then we'll, you know, get naked and get weird, and who knows? We'll just drink too much, and something weird will happen.
Maybe Frank will just get naked.
Maybe I'll just get naked, and we'll do a video podcast. We'll talk about our plans for season 3 or whatnot. But it'll be a good podcast. It'll be fun, and we'll wrap up season 2 of the show at that point. You can also get a hold of us, bbillsmny@gmail.com. And now you're going to ask about the art in the back of behind.
No, Paul? It's actually, is that apples and pears to your right?
Paul? The other side. That's Van. That's yeah. That's Stage Paris. Right.
I believe it is. Yes. There from we. All
right.
There we go.
Well, we're going to talk. Oh, look, we can see ourselves in the reflection of us. Oh, my God, that is so upsetting. You've got to stop. Okay. Well, if you've had a good time with this podcast, please let us know. Until next week, hope you guys have a nice week and you enjoy some really good football. And I'm sure we're all rooting against the Patriots because that's all we have anymore. I'm Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Have a good night, everyone.